from the corner of Broadway and Battery. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky. Broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. Tuesday afternoon, Steph Curry signing up for another max go-around with the Golden State Warriors. That should make everybody breathe just a little easier. Not that you didn't expect it to happen, but the deal is done today. Another $200 million contract with the Golden State Warriors. First time that's ever happened in NBA history. One player, one team. Wow. And we got free agent signings to talk about. We got a summer league game or a California league game. I don't know if it's official summer, whatever the hell it is. It's up at Golden One Center tonight. And we have a hell of a show with Alex Dickerson, who went grand salami in a win last night in Arizona. Anthony Slater a little bit later on. Ray and Matt, what an afternoon we got to go over today. How are you, fellas?
I'm just happy that the Warriors finally have filled their auto need.
Got an auto.
Forget the grand slam. How about Dickerson's triple, though? We're going to talk about the triple, right?
I mean, muscle it over the wall, buddy. Come on. seriously, he needed that night. He needed that night. The Giants needed every inch of that night, too. They were way ahead, and then all of a sudden that was a baseball game. They win it in extras, and we're certainly going to talk an awful lot about it. The mentality of a guy who's in a slump, who breaks out in a big way. You even saw what it turned him into, a Gold Glove left fielder at times last night. So look good, feel good, play good. It was all going right for Alex Dickerson and therefore the San Francisco Giants last night. They got Madison Bumgarner coming up tonight and Johnny Cueto in a step back in the time machine game. It should be very, very interesting. Tonight on ESPN2, we're going to see some new faces of the Golden State Warriors or not, because it looks like neither Kuminga nor Moody are going to be playing in this game tonight, knowing that the Warriors have a second game. And so what is this, load management at the dawn of a career? Is this possibly a trade? I don't know. I'm very surprised to hear that in the first chance to play both their teenage rookies, they'll be punting on that chance. And I even asked Twitter to explain it to me. There's some decent theories out there, but I'm surprised by the story. I really am.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, so I'm not going to make anything of it. If they don't play tomorrow night, then you got something. But tonight, you know, first night of a back-to-back, I don't know, maybe they're helping them acclimate to California. So I'm making nothing of it, because as much as we would like to make something of it, I don't think there's anything to see here yet.
Yeah, I'm with Ray. As long as they play tomorrow night, it's annoying because I sure wanted to watch them, and I got the DVR all set up and ready to go. And I guess it's, as I saw someone on Twitter put it, it's the Justinian Jessup show tonight. But I kind of take it at face value. They got two teenagers that have been on the team for, what, 4 days? And they're just going to give him an extra day to get ready rather than have him go back-to-back less than a week after joining the franchise?
I hope that's all it is. I wonder how many teams draft two teenagers and begin load management before they actually begin their careers, though. Like, what are they going to learn about NBA basketball in 24 hours that'll have them ready to go tomorrow but not ready to play tonight? Anyway, we won't make a big deal out of it. The thing that we have to make a big deal out of is what the Warriors have now done in free agency. Ray is right. If you needed an Otto, you got one. Otto Porter Jr. This is a name I think we were both kind of excited to see attached to the Warriors. And Matt, here he is. He turned down a mid-level elsewhere. I'm guessing that's Sacramento, maybe. He's 28 years old. He has talent. He has an injury past, which means getting his body right will be a key part of this upcoming season for the Warriors. Nemanja Bjelica, 1 year veteran minimum. That's a 6'10 stretch four who could absolutely space this floor out and make it work pretty darn well. I like that signing too. Again, these are not jump off the radar. The rest of the NBA world is going to sit up and take notice signings, but I think they're important and good and prudent signings for the front office.
Yeah, again,
yeah, there
you know,
are no
it's,
go ahead. Jump off. There's no jump off the radar signings available. So, if that's what you were expecting, that doesn't exist. Otto Porter is an interesting one. The injury history is largely confined to the last 2 years, which, you know, I think the obvious hope is weird years, weird times to be living in. They didn't go good for him, but he's had a nice full off season, and he should be as motivated as he's been in his whole career because he's on the best team he's ever been on, whether the Warriors are championship contenders or not. So if he's healthy, I don't think you could have done better on a veteran minimum than a guy in his prime who's a knockdown three-point shooter and has the length and defensive versatility to guard three or four positions. Like, that's about as good as you could have gotten. Bielitsa is a really nice stretch big, which I saw somebody on Twitter say, clearly one of the Warriors' goals this offseason is to make it so that they never have more than one non-shooter on the floor at a time, or at least they have that situation as little as possible. And Bielitsa is a guy you can play at the five and stretch out that should fit really nicely next to Draymond in a lot of lineups. I think you feel good. To your point about Porter, you mentioned Sacramento. I also heard the Rockets, but I think it's likely one of those teams. And look, neither of those teams are good, and I think that's kind of exactly the point. The Warriors are shopping in the, do you want to come take a shot at this thing with us or go play for more money somewhere where you can't even pretend you're taking a real shot? And that worked with Otto Porter. We've certainly seen other guys they might have liked go other places like Brooklyn and L.A. And I think if we're honest, Brooklyn and L.A., as they have been for most of the history of the NBA, are slightly ahead of the Warriors on that, come here and play for less list. But that doesn't mean there aren't valuable pieces out there for the Warriors. And I think they added two of them, and hopefully we'll add another one or two.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's clear what the Lakers are doing is they're trying to sign guys who are already in the Hall of Fame. I mean, just, when you go after Carmelo Anthony, you're basically saying, I don't want anybody who was born after 1990. It's not 1990, 1980. I mean, it's just, I don't know what the Lakers are doing at this point except getting together an alumni group of super friends. Where 10 years ago, you would have looked at that team and go, well, they're going to go 78-4. Now, I look at that and I go, well, if that's all you're doing, then, enjoy 10th because you're not surviving that. Your injury list will be extraordinary. And even at that, what does Carmelo have left except what his resume was 10 years ago?
The fact that LeBron and Carmelo are going to be on the same team is kind of something. I mean, just realizing that they were drafted and it's like, I'm interested in it. Like, here's the deal. If you got to serve me the Lakers next year, serve me an interesting, I don't know if it will work, but they got an awful lot of, if you're looking for experience, boy, the Lakers have plenty. So I'm not ready to dismiss it as dead on arrival.
No, I'm not either. Ray's right. It's geriatric, which it makes for a lot of good jokes. And I'm here for every single one of them. They're funny. But to answer Ray's question, Melo does kind of have something left. In fact, last year, he had the second highest effective field goal percentage of his entire career. He shot over 40% from three. He scored 13 points a game. He was effective in a reserve role for the Blazers, and I think he can be the same for the Lakers. The question is the health. They got five guys, 35 and over. Their best young star, Anthony Davis, is injury-prone, to say the least. And there's a few more over 30s with Russ and Ellington, and there's another guy in there too. Like, it is truly one of the oldest teams we've ever seen. and that doesn't sound like the best scenario.
We got an awful lot to get into today. We're also going to have to whip the gerbil because I think you can all hear the abundance caution summer tour of 2020 continues for us as we have retreated to our homes once again to broadcast. We're going to make sure everybody's internet is up and running so we don't have quite a little bit of a delay between us, but we are going to do a radio show for you today. And when we come on back, the lead topic on the Warriors flagship station must be Steph Curry getting another max. He and the Warriors have agreed on a four-year, $215 million contract extension, the first player in history to sign two $200 million deals. Not bad work if you can find it. He has now signed two of the five biggest contracts in NBA history. We know what he means to this franchise. We know what he means to the Bay Area. And I tell you, when you talk about the all-time great players that have come through the Bay Area, he has put himself in a position to where he might stand head and shoulders above them all. That includes Rice. That includes Mays. That includes Posey. That includes Bumgarner. That includes everyone. He might be the tip of the pyramid when it is all said and done. We have so much to get into today. A busy Tuesday. Alex Dickerson's going to join us at 3:30. Anthony Slater at 4:15. Your phone calls sprinkled throughout the program. Like I said, we're about to whip the gerbil, and we're going to get everything up and running and ready to go. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. It's a pleasure to have you along. We're brought to you by Stanford Healthcare.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
All right, the gerbils have been whipped. The guests have been booked. We're ready to go. Welcome to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky today. It is a very good day for Steph Curry. Steph Curry and the Warriors agreeing on a four-year, $215 million contract extension. Look, that probably didn't have to happen for it to be a good day for Steph. They seem to all be good days for that guy, but a day like this, it does not come around often. It certainly doesn't come around twice. Really, we can prove that. It's never come around twice for the same guy. Curry becomes the first player in NBA history to sign two $200 million contracts. It's not your father's league, Ray. It's not your father's league, Matt. This is a huge money-making engine, and that guy who has driven so much attention and value to the Golden State Warriors is, at that price, he is the rare four-year, $215 million underpaid extension. He really is. He has reached that Michael Jordan level of you really can't pay him enough to explain what he represents in terms of value to the franchise, to the fan base, to the city, to the game plan, to the coaching staff. He is the Golden State Warriors DNA.
Yeah, he didn't build the new arena, but he's surely responsible for filling it. And that means he is underpaid because the amount of money that they will take out of that building as a result of him still playing will more than make up for whatever they're laying out for his new contract. So they got a nine-figure bargain.
The money they pull out of that building from building it, which is down to Steph Curry, more or less, is enough to justify this contract five times over. So, yeah. I mean, look, max players in the NBA are fundamentally a discount in that way that we're talking about. But when it comes to paying Steph Curry this much until he's 37, I don't know that there's a better player this side of LeBron James that you could make that sort of investment in. So I it's a no-brainer. There was no negotiating here. It was just please sign. And he did, and it's good for everyone.
It's the second biggest contract ever, only behind Giannis's deal, because Giannis had a fifth year built into his contract. But it's worthy. And again, it's a bargain on day one. That's what he means to the Golden State Warriors. I think that he really is. He really, truly is becoming a he's the most important player, I think, in the history of San Francisco sports. And we've had a few important ones out here. You know, it didn't look like anyone could ever take that crown from Jerry Rice or Joe Montana, whoever you wanted to give credit to. And then came along Steve Young. And then came along, you know, before them all was Willie Mays. But Willie Mays came from somewhere. In terms of your career was entirely in the Bay Area. And look, we don't know how it might end for Steph. But I actually think I do. I think I'm looking at the one guy who understands that legacy, being Kobe career Laker, means more to the grand overall story of his career than played out the stretch as long as he could with Golden State and then hooked on with another team at the very, very end. I said it at the very end. There's only one man who had the power to tarnish Michael Jordan's legacy, and that was Michael Jordan himself. And he went to the Wizards, and it is the let's pretend that never happened, forgotten portion of his career that I think honestly would have had a better ending without that portion of his career. I think Steph has seen it all. I think the man understands history. I think he understands legacy, and he understands what rare air he is in this modern time. I mean, if Kobe is the last career something for sure, maybe he isn't, because that could be Steph.
His contract most resembles Bryant's contract, because at its very worst, it would saddle the Warriors with a $59 million player in his year 37. That said, all it is money. And he's, like we said, more than earned it, you know, in multiples already. So that if he's scandalously overpaid in 4 years, then he's scandalously overpaid in 4 years. And that means 1 year being scandalously overpaid and 15 of being either fairly compensated or grossly underpaid. So it's only a bad contract if he cannot play at all the last 2 years of that because of an injury. And there's no way of predicting what that is. So it is not even remotely close to a gamble. It is, however, a reward for services rendered that is very Kobe-like, because that was what his last deal was too, and everybody knew it at the time, that it was going to cripple the Lakers for a number of years, and we don't know what the Curry contract is going to do, but they still did it cheerfully because, and this was the only definition they had to give, is because it's Kobe.
Well, that's actually understating it, believe it or not. I mean, Ray is essentially right about everything he says, but Steph Curry means far more to the Warriors franchise than Kobe meant to the Lakers franchise, simply by virtue of the lack of previous Kobes.
Right.
I mean, if Kobe never existed, the Lakers would still have West and Baylor and Wilt and Shaq and Kareem and Magic. It's a tremendous list of all-time players. If not for Steph, the Warriors have a taste of Wilt and Rick Barry. And then, boy, that Run TMC was fun while it lasted. And, hey, we believe. Like, it's not a serious legacy of greatness. And Steph Curry not only changes that in a powerful way all by himself, but I think even has the power to change it somewhat going forward, to make the Warriors a different kind of franchise. And, you know, that remains to be seen whether this run extends and how long it can last just in terms of being a high-level competitive team. But Steph Curry is the level of player that can change things for an organization.
And, look, when we have Anthony Slater on, I think one of the things that we need to talk to him about a little bit later on today is the sit-down interview that was, I'm going to say, it was poorly received, that he did with Joe Lacob amongst Warrior fans. But I don't even know what the credit of poorly received information from Twitter-based Warrior fans is. It seems like Warrior fans just aren't happy unless they've got somebody to say, he's no good at what he does. And to try to pin that on Joe Lacob and say that he is some cantankerous, over-involved owner. And look, we are no shill for ownership on this show. Never have been, never will be. But when ownership is good, that needs to be highlighted and underlined. And to try to surmise or reach the conclusion that Joe Lacob could somehow become a nuisance to what the Warriors' true goals of victory are, is a complete misunderstanding of history. Again, like you said, Kobe was the chosen son who was able to continue the Laker legacy. The Golden State Warriors were the Atlanta Hawks until one man showed up. One man. Curry changed it all. And he couldn't even do it by himself. He needed an owner who got it. If you say Joe Lacob's a little bit too meddlesome for your, you know, he's a little bit too involved. He wants to sit in on too many meetings. He wants to talk way too much to people around him about players coming and going. He's been to five NBA finals in a row. That's how meddlesome he was. Three banners have gone up. He has done the athletic ownership equivalent of impossible. He took the bumbling, fumbling, you got to be kidding me, this entire franchise is a joke, Golden State Warriors, and has them ranked shoulder to shoulder with the most valuable franchises in the history of sport. I mean, it is staggering, the turnaround. And I just think that there are so many people who forgot what this was because it became happy hour. And everyone got drunk for 5 years in a row and everything got blurry. It's amazing the combination of Curry and Lacob, and they have changed everything. They have changed utterly everything. The direction of this franchise forever. Now, okay, you know, things come to an end, and this eventually will come to an end. It probably won't come to an end immediately, though, because of decisions that they've made that people want to complain about in the last draft, and we'll still figure out why Kuminga and Moody aren't playing tonight if we can before it's all said and done in the summer league game up in Sacramento. But this guy, I don't know if any point in time you could have looked at Kobe's contract and said, right there, that might be the single greatest value in the entire history of all sports. You could probably go to MIT, find a professor who could prove to you on paper that the $44 million four-year extension of Steph Curry is the single greatest contract delivered upon in terms of results and value and the mechanics that it was able to do to add Durant when that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity came around. If but for that, I really think that we could find the four-year, $44 million extension Steph Curry as the end of the rainbow greatest contract in the history of sports.
I think an argument could be made for any one of LeBron James's last three contracts, but Curry is the other guy in the ballpark, so we don't really need to argue about it one way or the other. But LeBron has paid off in all the same ways.
Right. He's an automatic trip to the NBA Finals, pretty much.
But those were max contracts. Damon's talking about a four-year, $44 million extension where Steph Curry became an MVP.
Making $11 million a year. $11 million a year. Do you see what DeRozan just got?
You're damn right I did. While LeBron's, I'm not arguing that the return's great, and you know, Michael Jordan for most of his career is another guy we'd probably want to talk about, but ultimately it's the just how low that contract was because of his health situation when he signed it. It just makes it incredibly rare. However, if we're not just limiting ourselves to the sport of basketball, I would submit one counterpoint, and it's a counterpoint that I was going to make, a player I was going to bring up, not as a counterpoint, as just a, man, how cool is that? Do you know where I'm going with this?
No.
Incredibly, if you're a Bay Area sports fan, a San Francisco sports fan in particular, you not only have had, since 2010, Steph Curry playing basketball for your local team, and doing incredible things, often at an incredible value by his contract. But Buster Posey was paid $400,000, $575,000, and then $615,000 in the years 2010 to 2012 as he became Rookie of the Year, MVP, and two-time champion.
pretty good, but that's like built into the just the structure.
I know.
But you're right. I mean, if you really wanted to get into the minutia and the details of where's the most amount of value, yeah, I mean, he's up there.
Two
he's
titles.
Yeah,
and just in general, right? Another guy over the same exact period of time, essentially, a guy who is absolutely the peak of class and talent and execution and role model and everything you want in his sport that has chosen to be, you know, a forever giant, right? Like, to have these two guys in the same city over the same decade and now potentially decade and a half, it's really incredible. Bay Area sports fans are so incredibly lucky.
And they're lucky to have had this kind of audience to appreciate them, because there are a lot of guys whose careers were not maybe as great, but close to it, and never got appreciated in the towns they were in. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Let's not be fooled there.
At some point today, can we have the least appreciated athlete of all time draft? We don't have a Tuesday trifecta today, but we might have to have a draft of least appreciated in the cities they lived in and played in draft. I think that could be fascinating. The least appreciated. I'm like, my mental Rolodex is already flipping through and now I can't host the show. So I'm going to have to put that on the back burner and think about it during a commercial break, because I don't even want to go down that road right now, especially with the news today that the Warriors have signed their first two free agents and they needed to do that. And they have done that. Otto Porter Jr. turned down a mid-level to take the minimum with the Golden State Warriors. At 28 years old, this is going to be his ninth season. He's a career 40% three-point shooter. He's 44% on the catch-and-shoot three over his last five seasons. His problem has been health. He's never played a full season. He hasn't played 60 games in a season in 4 years. Now, when it comes to managing health in terms of just getting guys ready to go and embracing load management and when to, when not to play guys, I think the Warriors are very good. They're ahead of that curve. So, you know, you don't want to hear another guy who needs to be load managed right out of the rip, especially when you need somebody to come in and give you a little something that Clay can't give you on nights where he's not going to be ready to go. And we know that there's a lot of nights he's not going to be ready to go early on in the year. But we do kind of like the signing. And if this guy stays healthy, there is not just the player you're getting, but there's the growth in the new system, which could really change the trajectory of what we think of Otto Porter based on health and based on performance. Today on the Morning Roast, Casey Johnson, who is a Bulls insider, was talking about how Porter is, if healthy, going to be a real good addition to the Warriors.
He's an incredibly smart player. He also has positional size, but he's a knockdown shooter when he's open, can get his shot off against a lot of matchups because of his size and his reach. And he's always moving without the ball. He's also a very good passer. So if he's on the court, he's absolutely going to help the Warriors. I think it's a fantastic fit, really, at both ends, because he can be he's a decent team defender as well.
Team defender, that's important. Got to be a team defender. Got to understand weak side presences, because that's a big problem to get on the court on Steve Kerr's team. So you got to know what the team is doing defensively. You just can't be lost out there, and he's not that type of player. And Bielitsa, a one-year veteran minimum for a 6'10 bona fide stretch four who can flirt with the concept of shooting 40% from downtown. It has happened. That was a few years ago, but he's never going to, not at any point in time in his career, has he enjoyed the gravitational pull that he's about to enjoy. So that could be somebody sticking corner threes all season long, and call him a poor man's Kevin Love, if you will.
That's a really good description. And I think in a lot of ways,
without the rebounds.
Well, you know what? He's not a terrible rebounder. He just plays on the outside a lot. So, you know, he's not going to crash the offensive boards for you necessarily, but he's fine. He's fine as a big. The Porter thing to me is kind of like, if it's taking what you had in Kelly Oubre and essentially trading the explosive athleticism for a much better understanding of the type of basketball the Warriors want to play. So And, you know, I was kind of an Oubre fan, and I thought he picked up a lot of that as the year went on. And I think you could see him making cuts that were better by the season's end than by season's start, certainly. But Porter comes in plug and play, ready to do all that stuff. And while he's not going to have the sort of explosive, thunderous plays that Oubre did, he's has a chance to be more effective overall if he can stay on the floor.
Yeah, he won't have that sort of I have to make a spectacular play here thing in his head, because if nothing else, his back won't let him do it, because that's the one worrisome thing about the contract. It's that bad backs don't tend to get better the longer you go in really any sport, but the NBA for sure. So that's the first thing he's got to do, because everything else I think is easily within his grasp. You know, they'll have to be very judicious about the way they use him. They will have to load manage him some, I would think, unless he shows that all of a sudden he can go 25, 30 minutes a game if they need him to. But I think other than, you know, the chronic back, he can absorb pretty much anything, because nobody's ever accused him of being a stupid player.
Basketball IQ, bring some to the table. Both these veterans bring that to the table. What kind of mentors they become for Kuminga and Moody and Wiseman to an extent is going to be interesting. Obviously, the mentorships in place already with the established Warriors core should be good enough, but I think these guys can add an awful lot too. So, interesting basketball season coming our way, and as we've been asking, and we will ask Anthony Slater a little bit later on, why neither Kuminga or Moody playing in Sacramento tonight? Is there possibly a trade afoot, and they needed to get Curry's numbers locked in before they could do anything? I'm not telling you it's out of the question, but I don't think that's going to happen, because controllable young contracts is part of what the Warriors need, and in those two players they now have, and I don't think they're going to go away from what they have, because it is what they need. They need these guys to play a little bit this year. They need more of the, they need a rookie plus year out of one of these guys, if not both of these guys. And it is odd that maybe their contracts aren't done. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they just want to make sure everything's, I just think it's odd that they're not playing, but I will subscribe to what you were selling, Ray. If they don't play tomorrow night, we have something to talk about. Tonight, we're probably taking the car of anxiety out for a spin before we need to. So we won't do that. We're not going to drive any rookie anxiety, since there's enough anxiety in the world. But it is too bad. I am going to be watching tonight. And you're right, Justinian Jessup drops a 50-burger tonight in Sacramento. You were there, and you saw it first. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be something else? What if by tomorrow's show, everyone is like, Justinian Jessup, oh, my God, Justinian Jessup.
Give him the mid-level exception.
Do it! I love it. I like dreaming about what a team might be. And I'll tell you, sometimes the deal you don't make is one of the best deals you're going to make. And I got to tell you, that's the way I look at Kent Bazemore. Kent Bazemore took less money and more years. He turned down less money and years to be a Laker. And honestly, like, I'm glad the Warriors aren't agreeing to a two-year contract with a already 32-year-old Kent Bazemore. I don't dislike him, but for everything he puts on the table, he takes something off. And I just don't think that a multi-year deal with Kent Bazemore is what the Warriors really needed. Now, I know that that's one of Curry's favorite, you know, guys, his partner, but I think Kent Bazemore not getting into a two-year deal with him is better than being in a two-year deal with Kent Bazemore. I just, no disrespect, I was never that. I know he had decent numbers. I know there is an argument to be made that he provided quite a bit of value last year. So long. Good luck, Kent.
He plays a role that doesn't genuinely require a two-year deal, because on a healthier team, I think you're looking at a ninth or tenth guy on the roster. And you certainly aren't going to look for that from a 32-year-old guy unless it's a really specific niche signing the way David West was. So I don't think that was a hard call for the Warriors at all.
Yeah, I mean, and as far as whether it's the right decision, I think it just comes down to who else they sign, right? I mean, all things being equal, if they now add, it seems insane, but I'd say one name to watch is Dennis Schroeder for that mid-level exception, because where's the money coming from? I mean, he wanted $20 million, but he's literally nobody has that anymore. The only team with considerable space is the Spurs, and I don't see them as a landing spot for him, you know? So I think there's a couple ways the Warriors can add better players than you thought they would. One is Dennis Schroeder saying, you know what, screw this league. I'm taking the mid-level exception, and every minute I play for the Warriors, I'm scoring until I get $20 million next year. Or you do something creative with Kelly Oubre and add maybe a Joe Ingles, for instance. Other than that, it's going to be someone else who, honestly, probably will be comparable to Kent Bazemore, and we can judge the trade-off at that point.
Patty Mills? That's a name that I think could still happen.
No, he's in Brooklyn.
Oh, is that done? I missed
done
that
deal.
Today. Yep. Patty Mills to Brooklyn. God, he's a pain in the ass. He'll be perfect for them. Really, I mean, he really will
be.
He helps. So we got an awful lot to just sort out. I'm going to have to open up my own free agent tracker. There's so much news to keep track of. I missed Mills to Brooklyn. Interesting. What the Lakers are becoming, very interesting. The on-jersey patch might as well be Metamucil. They are team murder, she wrote. Not bad, though. I don't know, man. I just don't know what to make of it. And we're going to figure it all out, and we're going to argue about it and talk about it today here on 95.7 The Game. Our first interview, Alex Dickerson, after the Grand Slam last night. He joins us at 3:30. We look forward to talking to Anthony Slater a little bit later on. We're talking about Warriors and their offseason and what they're doing and the Curry extension and what he's meant to this city. And you are welcome to join us at 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
You know, I know that the Olympics basically has been an unmitigated disaster across the board in terms of attention, people finding the events that they want to watch. Peacock has essentially removed basketball from anybody's ability to enjoy an Olympic basketball game. This entire Olympiad has out and out totally sucked. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. It really has. This entire Olympics has sucked pretty much across the board. They're trying really hard to oversell, like, oh, Simone came back on the balance beam. Great. Good for her. That's not, you know, she got over the twisties. Sounds good, which I never knew before this week was the terms of gymnastic yips that we basically saw Mackie Sasser and Chuck Knoblauch and guys go over. You see golf yips over putts all the time. So the gymnastic yips is the twisties.
Did you watch her video about it? Like her Instagram where she answered the questions and stuff?
No, I did not. I did not watch a video about it, but I like, look at it this way. She didn't have to sell me on it. Like I bought it as soon as I heard about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, it's one thing to not be able to throw the ball back to the pitcher. It's another thing entirely to lose confidence in your ability to do this, you know, half triple lutz while you're in midair and could break your neck if you get it wrong.
There was a video of her doing it at like a practice gym where she was just flopping to the mat face down,
like in the foam pit,
belly flop. I mean, it wasn't a foot, but yeah, like that, a version of that essentially. Like, and then she sort of answered some largely obnoxious but sort of interesting questions about it. And like, I gotta say, I don't think we even said anything irresponsible at all on this show about Simone Biles, but I still feel like I want to say maybe I didn't fully appreciate just how terrifying that sensation must be, especially for someone who ordinarily feels totally in control, spinning around bars and whatnot, to suddenly, like, all I can compare it to is, like, all of a sudden when I started jogging, I didn't know which direction I was moving. Like, I was just jogging like normal, and then all of a sudden, oh, my God, am I running straight up in the air? What's happening?
Yeah, the people who tried to compare it to the yips, and Damon accurately assessed this, yeah, it's the yips only if you, you know, factor in the possibility of spinal cord damage. That really did her a disservice, because it wasn't just, it's like you said, it's like you're, you know, you're skydiving, and then all of a sudden you lose sort of a sense of where the earth is compared to where you are. And then all of a sudden, all you know is sky all around you, and you have no idea where to land, let alone how. So, I mean, it is, and I talked to somebody who's been covering gymnastics for a long time, and she said that the twisties are terrifying. And she said, and I'm politing that up. It's, you know, because every time you leave the ground and you don't know where you are, you're trying to get yourself hurt. So, yeah, it's an extraordinarily dangerous thing. And to the extent that we learned something about gymnastics that maybe we didn't think of, it's that the risks to the athletes are that much greater than we thought they were.
There are, look, there are an awful lot of professional sports or elite level sports where obviously you could suffer a major, major injury. You're never as naked as you are in gymnastics. I mean, there's no pads. There's no nothing. There's pads on the ground, but there's no pads on you. I mean, just be totally honest with yourself. Have you ever watched a singular minute of an Olympic gymnastic routine and thought, well, that's easy? Never. So, imagine if you lacked the confidence to pinpoint true north while you're in the middle of a quintuple somersault. I don't even understand how you could function. And then you add on all the pressure on representing all that she represented, plus you're a woman athlete, plus you're a black woman athlete, and I could absolutely see how that could weigh on you, the eyes of the world. So, yeah, that was, you know, that I think that's going to be one of the biggest takeaways from this Olympics, what Simone Biles didn't do for all the right reasons. I know that we saw a really good dressage horse video where Snoop Dogg basically said, that horse is crip walking, which it was. It definitely looked like Dion going into the end zone. What's funny is that we have an element of Snoop being an Olympic broadcaster, yet a girl couldn't run track because she was on the weed. But we have Snoop coming to you live from Tokyo at times. That was kind of an interesting just wrinkle to the entire Olympics. And then we saw this today, and this is definitely the best thing about the Olympics so far. So dressage, equestrian, is the province of daddy's money. You ain't in there. There's nobody who comes to the equestrian field on a Groupon. You know, that is a very expensive sport. To own a horse that sucks is a, you know, expensive thing. To own a horse that does that and trains to do that is, I'm sure, a huge expense. So you'll see like little rich girls, little rich boys get involved in equestrian. One of those rich peoples, or daughter of a rich person, was Jessica Springsteen of the New Jersey Springsteens. You may have heard of them. And her horse, like if you're the daughter of a rock star, you better have a cool horse name, right? Well, she does. The horse that she came to compete with was Don Juan Van de Darkhova. That's fantastic. Don Juan Van de Darkhova. It's outstanding. It's an outstanding horse name. I'm betting on that at Saratoga today if it's going off in the third race.
He's a horse.
That's what I was going to say exactly. Is like that is the sort of horse name that you go bet on at the track no matter what the odds are.
Yeah, just $5. Right? Put it on that name. Yeah, I'm a name better.
I got to bet on that horse with that name. It's incredible.
What's your favorite horse name, Ray?
Mr.
Ed is very good. I was a I liked Fusaichi Pegasus. That was a great
one. Oh, that was a really good one.
Fusaichi Pegasus. That's woof. Sounds fast. It really does.
It does sound fast.
So it's the Olympics is just been an unmitigated flop. But I guess Simone had quite a moment. And I'll look at it this way. I'll try to find it. If I can actually find it in replay tonight, I doubt I'll be able to because NBC has totally blown its presentation in these Olympic Games. I don't know where anything is. If you look upon the channel guide and you say, oh, it's beach volleyball, you turn it on, it's diving. It's just, it's all of it's wrong. All of it's out of, you don't know where anything's going to be. Make it easy for me to watch.
Yeah, and these broadcasts, Olympic-wise, are always a little goofy when it's the opposite side of the world and happening in the middle of the night, especially now that they can't just save it and hope we don't find out the results and show it to us later. But you'd think with all the available technology, they could have a more coherent experience. I think that's all people are really asking for.
You know, Kate Scott, who wakes up to do our morning show very early, like Joe and Bonte to do our morning show, probably thought, you know, great. I get to leave this morning radio thing behind me as I go and broadcast in the Olympics. Whoops. She's getting up at like 2 a.m. to do these games instead of getting up at 4 a.m. to do a radio show. Her and Fran are waking up and just basically hooking their veins up to Dunkin' Donuts over on the East Coast and just getting coffee in one arm and donuts in the other arm and doing Olympic basketball on a monitor, which isn't an easy thing to do. I have heard Kate. She sounds fantastic. Her and Fran make a very good team.
It's a great team.
But, God, they got to get up. They have to get up yesterday to do today's game, basically. It ain't easy being a bi-coastal Olympic broadcaster.
And ultimately, NBC failed because they used this as a way to force people to buy Peacock. At a time when people are just itching for another reason to, you know, get off the grid entirely. You know, just one less thing to pay for. Thank you. And the fact that they keep ramrodding Peacock down your throat as though it's a great bargain, you know, the Olympics is not the way to do that. Because for the most part, I would suggest that the people who still watch the Olympics are watching them on their televisions. And they are, you know, in their 50s and north of that. And they're not going to do it. You know, it just, NBC has not figured out the way to convince people that the best way for people to consume their stuff is not on the main network or any of their ancillary networks. You know, that's the problem NBC's got. They're still run by a cable company, so they can't abandon that. But they're trying to force people off cable by giving them Peacock. And Peacock is not proving to be that compelling a lure for them.
No, I mean, the last thing anyone needs is another streaming service. We got Netflix, we got Hulu, we got We got Apple TV because you need that for the Ted Lasso. And then, you know what, Paramount? No way. You stood no chance. Disney Plus? All right, I got a kid. So that's going to happen. Plus, you got Marvel and Star Wars stuff, and you need that for the culture. So Disney Plus, you're in. Netflix, you were first to the party. You're definitely in. Hulu, you got in there. Everything else is too late to the party. The last thing I need is a new streaming service.
I'm on Paramount Plus for the challenge, but I'll be damned if I pay a penny for Peacock.
Having said all that, enjoy your all-new Odyssey app. Download it to your phone for free. And welcome everybody to your 3 o'clock hour.